Hello and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday, the 3rd of September 2024. My name is Jake and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen and read by Alison Soskis and Christine Churchill. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 6:21 and sunset is at 7:46. Before we start, here is a message from Margaret Simpson, Chair of Oxtalk.
Hello everyone, this is Margaret. I hope you've been able to enjoy the sunny, warm days that we've been having recently. I spoke to you a few weeks ago when Margaret Bringhurst, who had been the listener representative trustee, sadly died. I'm now inviting you to think whether being the listener representative is something that you are interested in considering. The main role for the listener representative is to listen to Ox Talk each week and check with one or two other listeners that they are satisfied with the quality of the weekly recording. If you would like more details, please ring the telephone number that is given out each week on Oxtalk and leave your name and telephone number and someone will get back to you. Now, my second invitation to you is to attend the Oxtalk AGM, which this year is going to be held on the Saturday, the 12th of October, from 2 o'clock until 4:30. And it's going to be held in the St Clement Centre, Cross Street. If you would like transport to and from the meeting, again, ring the telephone number given out each week and leave your name and telephone number, and someone will be in touch. So I look forward to hearing you will be attending the AGM. And until then, good wishes to you. See you then. Bye for now. Margaret.
Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Oxtalk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Oxtalk online.
Notice to listeners of Oxtalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Oxtalk using Alexa. To listen to Oxtalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Oxtalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
An art sculpture in the city centre attracted the attention of many onlookers, young and old, over the weekend. The colourful sculpture, which is part of this year's Ox Trail, which has featured ox sculptures taking over the streets to raise money for Sobo House Hospice Charity. The trail has seen individually painted sculptures dotted around the city for the public to go and find. Stagecoach West has backed the Oxtrail app, where players find and collect ox sculptures and unlock a sponsor reward for each one. The bus company donates £1 to Sobel House Hospice for each unlocked visit to its ox sculpture on the app. The display will continue until the end of August 2024, and after this, sculptures will be auctioned off to raise money for the hospice. The charity provides palliative care and support to around 3,000 adult patients a year, as well as their families, friends and carers.
A major refurbished project at Bury Knoll Pavilion in Headington has been completed. The project has transformed the old tennis pavilion into a community hub, bringing a range of new amenities and activities to the area. The new Bury Knoll Pavilion features a cafe space adjacent to the tennis courts, a multi-use games area for sports and community events, and new mini-golf and shuffleboard facilities. The upgrades have aimed to preserve the building's history while introducing modernised facilities that cater to families, youth groups and residents. The overhaul involved gutting, extending and modernising the old timber-framed structure to accommodate the cafe. The project has been carried out despite the building's state of disrepair and planning restrictions that prohibited its demolition. Mitchell Carter, Associate Director of Construction at ODS, said, "We're thrilled to see the transformation of Bury Knoll Pavilion into a welcoming and vibrant community hub. This project showcases our commitment to enhancing community facilities while preserving the historical and environmental integrity of our beloved sites." The refurbishment, part of a wider £600,000 investment in the site, stems from a 15-year agreement between Courtside and Oxford City Council. Courtside's operating model focuses on increasing physical and social activity by revitalising underutilised public buildings in parks. Jeff Hunter, CEO of Courtside, said, "We're thrilled to have opened our doors. Now complete, these exciting new facilities will help realise our mission of bringing people together and encouraging them to be active, serving as a base for connecting the community and encouraging physical and social well-being while protecting Bury Knoll Park as a place of rest and recreation for future generations." Courtside submitted its plans for the project in August 2023. According to the planning statement, the project aimed to redevelop and enhance the site. It continued, "The proposed development will also significantly enhance the quality of the facilities on the site and will bring them up to a modern standard. The scheme will provide a much-needed and attractive facility within an appropriate location."
Oxford has been named as one of the best areas in the UK for boat tours by a new study. Ferry travel firm Get By Ferry gathered data from TripAdvisor to find the number of boat tours in each major UK city or town, rated 4 stars out of 5 or higher. The results were then ranked based on the percentage of reviews with a score of 4 or more for all UK areas offering more than 10 different boat tours. Oxford rounded off the top 10 with 69.2% of boat tours receiving a score of 4 or higher across 1,137 reviews. Cambridge came out top with 90.9% of boat tours receiving a score of 4 or higher. Falmouth, Windsor, Bournemouth and Windermere were the other areas to make the top 5, with Poole, Norwich, Cardiff and Bristol also making the top 10. And Ante Dagjelic, CEO of Get By Ferry, said, "The UK boasts an exceptional array of boat tours, but those in Cambridge, Falmouth and Windsor stand far above the rest. These top-rated experiences seamlessly blend breathtaking scenery, rich history and expert commentary, ensuring an unforgettable journey for every passenger. Whether you're captivated by the grandeur of Windsor Castle, the vibrant maritime culture of Falmouth, or the timeless beauty of Cambridge's colleges, these tours certainly exemplify the absolute best of British boat tours."
A railway centre welcomed Paddington Bear on Bank Holiday Monday.
Didcot Railway Centre received a visit from Paddington on Monday, August the 26th. It follows a theatre performance of The Railway Children held at the centre earlier in August. On August the 2nd, the centre hosted the Tethered Wits Theatre Company for their performance of E. Nesbitt's classic novel. Four actors played several roles, namely the three children, Roberta, Peter and Phyllis, their parents, the station porter and a Russian gentleman. The Railway Centre often holds special events, such as its Lego event in July. Visitors had access to 21 acres of Great Western Railway history and unlimited train rides at the Brick Adventures. They could also compete against each other to build the highest tower in the quickest time.
A major Oxford street had to be closed after a fire at a restaurant. At around 11 p.m. on Friday, fire engines raced to reports of George Street's Ask Italian being on fire. Two fire appliances from Rooley Road Fire Station and one from Slade Park were mobilised to deal with the restaurant blaze. An Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service spokesman said, on arrival, crews were faced with a fire in the kitchen at the rear of the property that could be clearly seen from the street. Firefighters wearing breathing apparatus had to force entry and extinguish the fire using high-pressure hose reels. A large fan was used to remove smoke from the building. Incident commander Jason Clifford said the early detection from the fire alarm prevented the fire from escalating to the rest of the building and urged everyone to check they have working smoke detectors. Firefighters say that the cause of the fire is currently unknown.
Albert Einstein's relationship with Oxford will be explored in a book due to be published soon. Einstein in Oxford, set to be published on September the 12th, is the first book to focus on the physicist's connection to the city. He visited for the first time in 1931 to receive an honorary degree and to give lectures on relativity and the universe. While there, he chalked equations and diagrams on several blackboards, one of which remains a popular exhibit in Oxford's History of Science Museum. Einstein returned to Oxford in 1932 and then again in 1933 as a refugee from Nazi Germany. He was deeply attracted to the city's science, music and politics. Author Andrew Robinson will speak about Einstein in Oxford at the Western Library on September the 26th from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. The event is free, but booking is essential and can be done through the Bodleian Library's website. The book also explores Einstein's sense of humour and the German poem now kept in the Bodleian Library he wrote while staying in the college rooms formerly inhabited by mathematician and writer Lewis Carroll. Silke Ackerman, the director of the History of Science Museum, said Mr. Robinson's book unveils another fascinating, less familiar episode of the Einstein story. Mr. Robinson has written 25 books, including two on Einstein.
An annual donkey derby drew large crowds to Bampton on Bank Holiday Monday, August the 26th. The donkeys had travelled from Weston-super-Mare to give some children a ride and to provide many of the adults with a chance to place a bet. Sandford's Fields hosted the event organised by the Society for the Preservation of Ancient Junketing, Spadgers. Spadgers chairman Nick Rivett said, "What a fabulous occasion today was, with everyone enjoying themselves and coming together to support a very worthwhile charity. It's made all the effort worthwhile." A range of stalls offered ice creams, pin the tail on the donkey, spin the wheel and face painting, and there was also a barbecue, beer tent, tea tent and craft stalls. The next Spadgers event will be the fireworks display in Bampton on October the 26th.
Thames Water's consultation on plans for a massive new reservoir in Oxfordshire closed yesterday. The utility company launched the public consultation on its plans for SESRO, South East Strategic Reservoir option, in June. The reservoir, which would be situated southwest of Abingdon, would produce up to 270 million litres of water per day, providing additional water supplies to 15 million people. It is set to be nearly as big as Gatwick Airport and has faced repeated local opposition. Abingdon Town Council and Vale of Wight Horse District Council have both objected as part of the consultation process. Leading the opposition is GARD, Group Against Reservoir Development. GARD and CPRE have launched a joint petition calling on DEFRA Secretary of State Steve Reid to call Thames Water's plans in for a public inquiry, and to date more than 3,000 people have signed the petition. Campaigners have accused the water company of putting out misleading information about the proposed reservoir. They said pictures of tree-lined embankments will never be realised in practice, as there are strict rules about minimising planting on reservoir slopes to avoid trees' roots weakening the embankment. Dr. Derek Stork, chairman of GARD, said earlier, "The designs put forward by Thames are clearly designed to fool the public into thinking this is a country park leisure facility. It is not. It's a huge, unnatural structure which must be designed with utmost regard to safety, or it will be a liability and a disaster waiting to happen." Thames Water has since responded by saying, "The reservoir embankments would be designed to reflect the character of the existing landscape, with varied gradients and designed to improve the biodiversity habitat and aligned with woodlands traversing the embankments. The embankments would be laid with grass, with trees planted, and the slope gradients varied to create an interesting natural feature. Our design encompasses gradual slopes with landscape fill, which is different from the structural fill needed to create the embankments, allowing for the opportunity for the planting of trees. Trees won't be planted where they could weaken the reservoir embankment structure." Leonie Dubois, Thames Water's head of engagement, land and consents, said earlier that community feedback was at the heart of our plans for the proposed new reservoir in Oxfordshire. She added, "While the primary purpose of the reservoir is to secure future water supply, we want to create a much-loved community resource where people can walk, cycle and sail."
A key road in Oxford has been left unusable after flooding hit the city during a weekend downpour. Flooding under the bridge on Watlington Road on Saturday caused several city bus services to be diverted. A spokesperson for Oxford Bus Company said, "Due to flooding under the bridge on Watlington Road, our 3A and 11 services will be diverting along Cudston Way and Barnes Road in both directions. We will be unable to serve Watlington Road and Garsington Road. We apologise for any inconvenience caused." Oxford Bus Company later stated, "Due to flooding under the bridge on Watlington Road, our 11X services will be diverting along Grenoble Road in both directions." A yellow weather warning had been issued for the southeast by the Met Office, with rain affecting large swathes of the region.
Patients and staff at Oxford University Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, OUH, are being encouraged to get their blood pressure checked as part of this year's Know Your Numbers Blood Pressure Testing and Awareness Week in September. The Trust's Here for Health team, working with the Equality, Diversity and Inclusion, EDI, Maternity Working Group and Health Checks Oxfordshire, will be running blood pressure pop-up stands across OUH sites so people can measure their blood pressure and understand how to reduce health risks. High blood pressure, also known as hypertension, puts people at an increased risk of developing a range of medical problems such as heart attacks, cardiovascular disease, CVD, strokes, eye problems, kidney disease, heart failure and heart rhythm problems. Lifestyle changes such as improving your diet and exercising more regularly and earlier detection can save lives and reduce health inequalities. In total, CVD contributes to a quarter of all deaths in the UK. However, CVD doesn't affect everyone equally, as those from South Asian and Black groups are at higher risk, and CVD also accounts for one-fifth of the life expectancy gap between the most and least deprived communities in England. Emma Hagues, Here for Health Service Development Manager at OUH, said, "Regular blood pressure checks help people manage their health, lowering the risk of serious conditions and enhancing well-being." Raising awareness about blood pressure is also vital in addressing health inequalities, which is a key focus for us. Regardless of age, it's important to monitor and control blood pressure, as high blood pressure is not an inevitable part of aging and can be managed at any stage of life.
Previously unpublished poems by fantasy author J.R.R. Tolkien are about to go into print. Tolkien, who lived in Oxford, became famous for writing The Hobbit and its sequel, The Lord of the Rings. He struggled to publish his poetry collections during his career, although he included nearly 100 poems in The Hobbit and in The Lord of the Rings. Now, half a century after his death, 70 previously unpublished poems are to be made available in a landmark publication. The collected poems of J.R.R. Tolkien will be published by HarperCollins next month, featuring more than 196 of his poems. His son and literary executor, Christopher Tolkien, had wanted his father's poetic talent to be better known, and before his own death in 2020, worked on the project with two leading Tolkien experts, husband and wife, Christina Scull and Wayne Hammond. Mr. Hammond told The Observer that there are remarkably good unpublished poems in the collection. He added, "This will show even more Tolkien's love of language, his love of words." Ms. Scull said, "The poems will add more to our view of Tolkien as a creative writer." The couple waded through a great mass of manuscripts and typescripts, some in Christopher's possession and others in the Bodleian Library in Oxford, among other archives. The text ranged from beautiful calligraphy to the worst scrawl, Mr. Hammond said. During the First World War, Tolkien had been a signals officer with the Lancashire Fusiliers when he was posted to France and saw action on the Somme. In late 1916, he was invalided home with trench fever. The unpublished material includes war poems, metaphorical works that are concerned with life, loss, faith and friendship, rather than trenches and battles. The Skull was particularly moved by an unfinished poem, The Empty Chapel, about a lone soldier hearing marching feet and drumming. Many who enjoy his stories of Middle-earth pass over their poems very quickly, or avoid them altogether, either in haste to get on with the prose narrative, or because they dislike poetry in general, or think they do.
Two Oxfordshire watering holes are finalists of the esteemed Great British Pub Awards. The Great British Pub Awards celebrate the finest pubs in the UK with a wide range of categories including Best Pub for Families, Best Pub Garden, Best Pub for Entertainment and more. The Dolphin in Wallingford and the Royal Oak Ramsden near Whitney are among the finalists. The Dolphin has been nominated for Green King Pub of the Year, and the Royal Oak Ramsden has been nominated for Best Sustainable Pub. In a statement, the Dolphin said, "As a team, we have worked incredibly hard to help where we can within our local community since lockdown. We are so very proud that as a team, our efforts are recognised. I'd like to say a big thank you and well done to everyone who has helped and supported us whilst we help and support where needed. We will be going to the Great British Pub Awards in Manchester to find out if we're bringing home this year's top honour. Wish us luck." The Great British Pub Awards 2024 will take place on Tuesday, September the 17th at Victoria Warehouse in Manchester. The website says the event, hosted by actor and presenter Ralph Little, is a chance for you and your team to gain the recognition you deserve, catch up with industry leaders, and share in the celebration of our wonderful sector. There are still limited tickets available for the event.
Firefighters in Bicester have used a housing development which is under construction in the town to carry out training exercises. Churchill's Living Development became a training site for the Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service's Bicester Fire Station team on Tuesday, August the 13th, as they practiced working at a height. This included climbing and descending using harnesses and lanyards, assessing anchor points, rescue techniques, and team communication. Watch manager Coral Hollis said, "We were joined by the rescue tender from Kidlington Fire Station, who enabled us to carry out training in a unique location. didn't take locals long to spot us. Churchill kindly provided our crew their crane, where we got to test and refresh our working at height skills. For anyone that attended our open day and experienced the height of the hydraulic platform, the height of this crane exceeds that. At an incident, we may request specialist advice and skills from the site management and crane operator, and it was great to start building these communication channels.
An Oxfordshire-based artist and Oasis fan who auctions his art to raise money for charity has been revelling in the announcement the band will be getting back together next year. Paul Fellows from Bicester started creating art as a side project during the COVID pandemic 3 years ago, and it has since grown. Mr. Fellows, who has met his hero, Noel Gallagher, mainly creates Oasis-related artwork alongside his job as an illustrator at the Open University. He decided to raise money through auctioning his signed artwork to say thank you to Great Ormond Street Hospital, who take care of his son, Thomas. He managed to get Noel and Liam Gallagher to sign his pieces to auction off, meeting Noel in the process. It was just a hobby, really, and then people started showing a bit of interest, so I set up a website where I sell my prints, he said. Thomas has a brain tumour and has undergone 3 lots of surgery. So far, Mr. Fellows has completed 3 fundraisers, raising £2,500 for the hospital. I think for me, going there and seeing all the children in the hospital is a real humbling experience. I just thought, what can I do to help in any way and say thank you to the staff and team there? That was where the idea came about for the fundraising. I've had letters from them thanking me for it. It's a nice feeling to give something back, he added. His Instagram account shows behind the scenes of his art and the steps in creating it. A lot of people think the computer does it for you, especially with AI now, he said, adding that this is not the case. As shown on his Instagram account, Mr. Fellows' ideas start with a rough pencil and pen sketch, which are then traced off and coloured up in Adobe Illustrator. Speaking on meeting his hero, Noel, Mr. Fellows said it was quite surreal. Laughing, he added, they say to never meet your heroes, don't they? He was a really nice guy. He signed more bits than he should have done for us, and I think he was quite impressed with the artwork. He doesn't give too much away. It was an amazing experience. Mr. Fellows said he'll be trying to get tickets for Oasis, who just this week announced that they will be reuniting. Speaking on the news, he said, I think people always thought it would happen, but I thought it had gone too long, to be honest. It's going to be an exciting time, I think.
For low-maintenance gardening requiring minimal weeding and watering, consider a rock garden. Some of the best can be made from concrete rubble and bricks discarded from building works. It's a common misconception that gardens require rich, moisture-retaining soils. Rockeries with gravel or sand-rich mediums encourage shorter, sturdier growth, which is more resilient to drought, allow excellent drainage in times of heavy rain, preventing waterlogging, and require less weeding. To get started, spread a layer of sharp sand, average around 30 centimetres, mixed with crushed rubble in wavy mounds over the area you want to transform. Above this, place larger pieces of rock or rubble, and then fill in the gaps between with a mixture of equal parts topsoil and fine gravel, pebbles or small pieces of broken rubble. For inspiration on similar gardens, look up the London Olympic Park and the walled garden at the Nep Estate in West Sussex. Some suggestions of native plants to include in a rock garden are sea thrift, Vipus bugloss, bloody cranesbill, rock rose, harebell, common toad flax, and wild herbs such as marjoram, basil or thyme. You can also use non-native plants and varieties such as hardy geraniums, eryngiums, echinaceas, verbenas, salvias and lavender, as well as bulbs such as crocuses, tulips and alliums to give colour and flowers for pollinators. But don't forget the natives, since some wildlife depends on them. Increasingly wet winters combined with summer droughts mean that there's never been a better time to get a water butt. By storing rainwater, you can play a small part in alleviating pressure on reservoirs and sewage systems. Digging a pond or making a rain garden provides fantastic habitats for wildlife, and you can use the rainwater collected in your water butt to periodically top them up. It's also much better for wildlife than treated tap water. A rain garden is a shallow depression in the ground which temporarily holds water runoff from roofs or other impervious surfaces, such as sloping paving. Unlike a pond, the water is slowly able to percolate into the soil below. To accommodate typical UK rainfall, a rain garden should measure approximately 20% of the roof or other surface area receiving the rain, and the depressions should measure around 25 centimetres in depth. The area is planted with plants that can temporarily endure standing water, but also tolerate dry spells.
Oxfordshire residents are invited to take part in a 10-kilometre walk in support of a palliative care and bereavement support charity. Sue Ryder's Starlight Hike Thames Valley will take place at Maple Durham Estate on the Oxfordshire border on Saturday, October the 5th. It aims to bring together hundreds of walkers with their friends, families and colleagues for the nightlit walk. Last year, the charity's hospice teams provided care to more than 8,700 people, including from its palliative care hub in South Oxfordshire. The event will begin at 5 p.m, providing an evening featuring live music from DJ 2Play and a Zumba warm-up. Walkers, some sporting fancy dress, flashing headwear and neon face paint, will then set off on the 10-kilometre journey at 6 p.m. They will enjoy views across the Thames and singing from Glee Choir as they cross the finish line. Sue Soff, Senior Community Fundraiser for Sue Ryder Palliative Care Hub South Oxfordshire, said, "The evening is an opportunity for the community to get together and light up the skies for their loved ones, raise funds and help create a future where everyone has access to care and support at the end of their life. Take part as a team, raising funds jointly or individually, and together we can ensure that no one has to face dying or grief alone. If this sounds like something you don't want to miss out on, sign up today. If you can't join us on the hike, but still want to be part of this incredible event, we are also looking for volunteers to support the event. Contact us to find out more. We can't wait to see you all there." A dedication area will be set up where participants can take a moment to remember those they love and miss. New for this year is a bid to make the event greener. Walkers are invited to donate unwanted clothes, which will be sold in Sue Ryder charity shops, helping to reduce waste and support the charity's services. Broadcast journalist and presenter Chris Hollins is lending his support to Sue Ryder's Starlight Hike in Thames Valley. He said, "Being part of the Oxfordshire community, I know how much Sue Ryder means to local families and how important their work is in supporting people approaching the end of their lives or grieving. That's why I'm encouraging everyone to step out at Sue Ryder Starlight Hike Thames Valley at the glorious Maple Durham Estate and support the charity so they can continue to be there when we need them most."
A community group supporting Cholsey residents has expanded its services after receiving a £12,500 grant. Cholsey volunteers received the money through a community capacity grant from Oxfordshire County Council. The money, which was awarded from the larger grants programme last year, is designed to support people to live happily and independently within their own communities. Cholsey volunteers used last year's funding to develop a community larder and food bank, as well as create a new Cholsey welcome space for villagers to socialise. The grant also helped provide 100 more rides for their hospital driver service and increase their meal delivery service by 46%, resulting in 2,600 meals, 1,560 treat bags and 1,976 food boxes being shared out in the last year. Councillor Tim Bearder, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Adult Social Care, said, "It's great to see residents coming together to make use of this significant council funding, building community resilience and supporting each other. Due to the large sums of money made available through the community capacity grants, groups and organisations like the Chelsea Volunteers are able to make a considerable difference. In contrast to the Council's smaller Connected Communities Fund, which offers funding of up to £5,000, the Community Capacity Grants give organisations the opportunity to apply for up to £20,000.
10 bereaved families have created songs in memory of their children who died. The families, supported by Oxford-based Helen and Douglas House Children's Hospice, had the opportunity to create these songs through the Keepsake Circle project. They were made with the help of songstress Kiki DeVille and award-winning songwriter Angus Powell at the Keepsake Circle. Ms DeVille, based in North Yorkshire, and Mr Powell, based in Wales, travelled to Oxford during the summer of 2023 to meet each family individually. With the support of the Helen and Douglas House bereavement team, each family shared memories of their child. Over the following months, an original song was created for each child. These songs were then performed live to friends and family by Ms. DeVille and Mr. Powell during a private concert at Kingston Bagpew's house on May the 20th. Among the families were Holly and Jason Coe, whose daughter Jasmine died 5 days after she was born in 2015, and Vicky and Keith Newell, whose 8-year-old daughter Jessica died in 2022. Ms. Newell said, "Working with Kiki and Angus has been beautiful. It was quite hard to begin with feeling that we had to try and capture Jessica in the one meeting we had together. I left wondering if I had said everything I wanted to say about her, but it's incredible to see how that goes from that to this incredible song. I feel that this song is another step along that journey to remember her. She can be in our lives forever, and we can have this song to play at special moments when we want to remember her." Helen and Douglas House is only the second hospice in the UK to take part in the project. The hospice provides support for families with terminally ill children during their lives and assists families in their grief. In early 2023, it was decided to add the Keepsake Circle project to its range of services, working with Ms. DeVille, who is also a bereaved parent, and Mr. Powell, who set up the Keepsake Circle together in 2022. Ms. DeVille, whose son Dexter died 17 years ago, said, "It was so lovely to be welcomed to Helen and Douglas House. We were made to feel like family. The team has been wonderful, supportive, professional, and incredibly organised." Mr. Powell added, "It's been such a heartwarming experience. The team and the families have been absolutely amazing. We feel incredibly proud to do what we do, to meet these wonderfully inspiring people and hear all about their children."
Oxfordshire schools said they are delighted and incredibly grateful after receiving donations of iPads from a languages college. EF International Language Campuses has donated 30 refurbished iPads to schools including North Kidlington Primary School, Dr South CE Primary School in Islip and St Thomas More Catholic Primary School in Kidlington, with more set to follow. The initiative aims to provide pupils with the necessary tools to thrive academically, fostering a more inclusive and equitable learning environment. It also extends the lifespan of the equipment, helping to support sustainability goals. Julian Exley, head teacher at St Thomas More Catholic Primary School, said the generous donation of 10 iPads will greatly enhance students' learning experience and help integrate more technology into the classroom. She added, "We are incredibly grateful for EF's kindness and commitment to education." Co-head teacher at Dr South CE Primary School, Helen Watson, said, "We are delighted to have received these iPads from EF, which will support the learning of children in our school."
Staff at Jeremy Clarkson's new Oxfordshire pub have told customers when the Star will be at the pub. The former Top Gear host purchased the Windmill Pub in Astle near Burford for around £1 million and renamed it the Farmer's Dog. Mr. Clarkson opened the watering hole on Friday the 23rd of August ahead of schedule to massive crowds eager to try out the venue and grab a pint of Hawkstone. The 64-year-old made various appearances at the pub over the bank holiday weekend, causing many to travel to the venue in the hopes of spotting him. One staff member was talking to a pair of customers this weekend and confirmed it is hard to know just when Mr. Clarkson will be at the watering hole. He said, we never really know when he's coming, but he's here often. He'll pop in and out just like now, as he's just gone. The staff member was alluding to the Grand Tour star being at the pub on Sunday. Fans watched as he drove off waving to the customers in a white car later in the afternoon. Mr. Clarkson himself responded to a fan asking when he would be in the area this week on X. The fan asked, "Are you at your farm this week? I'm in the Cotswolds and I'm going to visit." "I'm at the farm every day," responded Mr. Clarkson.
Patients in Oxfordshire experiencing a mental health crisis can now benefit from support through 111, the NHS has announced today. People of all ages, including children, who are in crisis or concerned family and loved ones, can now call 111, select the mental health option and speak to a trained mental health professional. NHS staff can guide callers with next steps such as organising face-to-face community support or facilitating access to alternative services such as crisis cafes or safe havens, which provide a place for people to stay as an alternative to A&E or hospital admission. The NHS continues to advise people to call 999 if there is a serious risk to life. NHS National Director for Mental Health, Claire Murdoch, said, "We know record numbers of people are suffering with their mental health, and we want to ensure that when people are in crisis, they have easy, straightforward access to support." While the NHS made significant progress during the pandemic, with local services creating their own crisis phone lines, we want to go a step further by giving people everywhere in England one single point of access via NHS 111. And in doing so, I'm proud that we will become one of the first countries in the world to offer a free universal package of support to people through one easy access phone line.
6 months in, the founders of a female-only running club in Oxford, set up to make women feel safer running in the dark, have spoken out on the group's success. Harriet Day, 26, from Wallingford, and Megan Titterington, 24, from Bicester, set up Oxford Girls Running in February after meeting on TikTok. The duo decided to start the free running club and have since built a supportive community of runners. Reflecting on the last 6 months, Ms. Day said, "I think we can both say it's very successful. It feels so rewarding. It's the space that we wanted, and we really didn't expect it to take off the way it did. We feel like it's more than we ever could have imagined, to be honest, and I think success for us is just seeing the girls enjoy themselves, feeling safe in the community, and having that social network." The club meets at Westgate every Monday at 6 p.m. to run 5 kilometres around the city centre. Ms. Day said, "There are people who don't want to go out on their runs in the winter because they feel unsafe." She added that providing a safe environment is such an honour. Oxford Girls Running also hosts socials and recently a picnic to say thank you to the group for their continued support. "Ultimately, it's not me and Megan who make the community, it's people who come every week. So it was really nice for everyone to have that chance to socialise," Ms. Day said. Ms. Titterington added that the social aspect of the group has proved popular. "I think maybe it's a testament to the fact that making friends in your 20s is really, really difficult. We've had some girls who've moved into the area a week before. They find the club is so important because this is a way for them to meet people in a new area where they have no friends. We had an event recently, and it felt like the first time in a long time that I had a girls' group again, and I really missed that from university. I'm just really grateful, more than anything, that this has been as successful as it has, in the sense that it means that I've made so many new friends."
Des Buckingham rued sloppy decision-making in the final third as Oxford United crashed out of the Carabao Cup. Brandon Thomas Asante scored the only goal of the game just before the hour mark as the Ewes were beaten 1-0 at Coventry City in the second round. United head coach Buckingham wanted to see more fluidity from his side when in dangerous areas of the pitch. He said, up until the sloppy goal that we've given away, it was a pretty even game. The goal gave them a bit of momentum for 10 or 15 minutes, and Matt Ingram has made two good saves off the back of that. We then regained a bit of control back, and we arguably should have scored two at the end, with Mark Harris across the box and the other, which falls to Will Vaux on the edge. The league has always been our priority without being too corny with the saying. It's given us a chance to look at players, and we've done that. We had Dane Scarlett, who started up front and got 80 minutes, and Owen Dale, who we welcomed back from injury, and we got 60 minutes into him, plus Malcolm Elboy and Louis Sibley. It gave us a chance to look at those in this game, to add minutes, but also to see what they can do potentially for Saturday. I thought we got up the pitch pretty well. We had different ways of getting out, and we showed that. It was in the final third where we got into good areas. It was just the crispness and the cleanness of the decision-making or the movement in and around. You get that with time and those relationships, and we've seen in the three games in the league when players play together more often, you get that. It's not an excuse for those that play. They know what we're doing, but at times they can look a little bit clunky. I just felt when we got to the final third, at times, we weren't as crisp in our decision-making and other bits that we normally are. Buckingham, though, was pleased with the improvement he felt the youth showed after a triple substitution made just after the hour mark. We saw that with the changes we made around 60 minutes. After the goal, that's when we did start creating, he said. We had a couple of moments in the first half and we chose to pass instead of shoot. There were two or three occasions. I've made no secret of it. We're still in the market for certain players, and we've got until Friday for that.
Reported interest from Oxford United in Norwich City winger Abu Kamara is understood to be accurate. The Ewes have been linked with the 21-year-old who submitted a transfer request last week. Fellow Sky Bet Championship sides Hull City and Luton Town have reportedly made bids of £2.5 million for Kamara, with his preference being the Tigers, according to BBC Sport. United are understood to have bid for Kamara, however it is unknown at this stage whether that offer matched the ones made by Hull and Luton. The Oxford Mail understands that the Ewes have other options though if a move for Kamara fails to materialise. Kamara spent last season on loan at Portsmouth, and the Fratton Park outfit have also reportedly shown interest in signing their former loanee on a permanent basis. Kamara came through the Canaries Academy and made his senior debut in April 2023. He joined Pompey on loan for the 2023-2024 campaign and scored 10 goals in 52 appearances across all competitions as John Mousinho led the side to the League One title.
Oxford United women recovered from conceding an early goal to comfortably win at Plymouth Argyle. The Ewes had an early sight of goal when Zoe Barrett broke through but saw her shot take a deflection. United then found themselves a goal down after 9 minutes when Tyre Pomfret headed home from a corner and then struggled to break down a tough Argyle style before the half-time break. 5 minutes into the second period, though, Barrett found Lee Burridge, who fired in from long range to beat Argyle goalkeeper Lily Felgate. Phoebe Poole shot wide just after the hour mark, and Barrett then gave the Ewes the lead midway through the second half, tapping home from a Poole cross after United won the ball back on the edge of the Argyle area. Beata Budalova, on as a substitute for Poole just 5 minutes earlier, secured the 3 points with 5 minutes to go when she won possession just outside the Argyle penalty box and then rounded Felgate. Ewes manager Sam Rose said It was loads better in the second half, and I think that the changes that we made really helped, not just bringing players off the bench, but in terms of our structure, just to open up the play a little bit. Plymouth were 1-0 up and sat deep behind the ball and made it really difficult for us, so that was our challenge, having conceded earlier in a set play. We're over the moon that we managed to score 3 goals in the second half. Our skipper, Lear, got us back into the game with an effort from way out, which gave us the life we needed to have a bit of belief about us to go and try and win the game. Vita's come off the bench to ultimately put the game to bed, which is great. It's important if you don't start, you're ready to come on, and everybody did that. We've got Jenna Legg to come back in, which is going to be a massive boost for us, and we might have another player through the door between now and the weekend. We're happy with where we are at, but to add Jenna plus another into the squad is really going to help, and that's a positive. It was a good win, and hopefully we can build on that and keep ticking on. United lost their opening game of the Southern Premier Division season 3-0 against Ipswich Town, and we're next in action on Wednesday night at Abingdon United in the National League Cup determining round.
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, please telephone Margaret on 07496 062 280. That's 07496 062 280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspaper skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.